Welcome to We're Getting a Dog, Season 6. We have a very special treat for you all this week. I am unfortunately not in most of this episode, but it's going to be Wesley interviewing people from Summit Labs, Summit Labradors, Sue Summer and Linda Waco. This is a fantastic interview, you all. I had the pleasure of editing it, dipping my toe into editing for the first time, so taking a little bit of work off of Wesley's shoulders in that way. But yeah, I got to listen to the whole thing editing, and it is just fantastic. It reminded me everything I love about Labrador Retrievers. And if you're curious about anything that it takes to become a breeder, I mean, Sue and Linda are clearly just such professionals and love the dogs and care for the dogs and their owners so much. And it's just a pleasure. So let's dive right in. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to We're Getting a Dog. For those of you listeners, this is Wesley, and Dylan is at work, so I'm sorry he couldn't be here for this interview, but it's just me today. But we're super happy to have you on. You please just like introduce yourselves, your business. Go right ahead. Yeah.
I'm Sue Summer, and I'm a Labrador breeder. Our kennel prefix is Summit, and I'm here with my best friend, Linda Waco. I live in Texas. We used to live in the Midwest together, but I moved to Texas. Linda still lives in Illinois. If you want to say anything, Linda.
Yep. And I'm Linda Waco, and I live in Illinois. And Sue and I have been friends for over 40 years, and we breed Labradors together, even though we're, I don't know, how many? Over 1,000 miles apart.
Yeah, three days of driving.
Whoa. That's...
I should do this.
You can't keep best friends apart, that's for sure, right? Okay, well, thank you so much for being on our show. We're super excited to have you on just to talk about this breed, because this is the most popular breed that's registered with the AKC, or the number one for a long time. And we just, were thrilled when you responded to us. So I'm going to get right into the questions. And the first one I'm going to ask is, what was your first experience with the Labrador Retriever?
So I grew up with our family, as they call them now, all American dogs. And I had her in 4-H, and I really loved dog stuff. But when she got too old to participate and I knew that I wanted to get a purebred dog, I spent hours reading the AKC dog books and looking at all of the breeds. At the time, there might have been 150 breeds. And I just settled on the Labrador. The description of the Labrador includes the word amiable, and that was the dog for me. So Linda's answering the door.
Yeah.
But I'm going to answer Linda's part. So when we met some years later and some Labradors later, she had a Doberman and I had a Labrador. We went to dog training together, and
we have to move our car.
Okay.
You're striping our car.
Can you put us on for a
second?
Yeah,
we can pause. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay. I think we're back now. Perfect. I need Linda's answer now, basically, because I don't know if we got through it. Yeah.
I said I had a Labrador and you had a Doberman.
A Doberman. Yeah.
So we met in the late 70s and we decided to go obedience training together, and we were both obedience competitors already. And Sue had these two Labradors, and I had a Doberman, and I really liked her dogs, and I got to know them personally. And I have worked in an animal hospital. At that point, I had been there for a while, but eventually I was there for 26 years. But so I knew a lot of breeds, and I knew Labradors as people's pets, but I didn't know them like I got to know them training with Sue. So then little by little, I wanted
and
to
I
know
remember
them
she
more.
Used to say, they're nice dogs, but they're always wet. They were. Because Dobermans really don't like the rain. They don't want it to go in their ears. They don't want to
right.
go.
Yeah.
And then my husband had always been a hunter his whole life, and he had relatives that had Labradors. And so he's always, would say, boy, it would be nice if I had my own dog to hunt with. And I knew Sue, and then a relative
one
of ours.
One thing led to
yeah,
another.
A relative of ours bought a dog from Sue, and then eventually they
the next thing you knew, she was naming her dog Cinco because it was the fifth Labrador. They moved out of the suburbs into the country.
That's awesome.
What happens.
For sure. I always feel like the past couple of breeders I've asked about, like, how did you get into the breeding, whatever breed they do, and they always say, well, it started with, like, my friend had one or I had one as a kid, and then we just, you know, found that it was a great thing to do. And yeah, the Basset Hound owner I had was, she was a shower for a while, and then that got her into breeding them later on. But
often
also
your mother says, like, mine did only one dog, but when you grow up you can aunt, and then I was like, I'm grown up.
Yeah, and my mother was the one that broke her own rule, because we had two dogs we still have two dogs. We had the one beagle, and she's like, we're not getting another beagle. And then she met one, I think I tell this story in the podcast, she met one, she worked for a news station, and they had, like, a dog spot on the news, and they brought Wilson, who we have still, and she was just like, she told the producer, she's like, don't air that dog spot, because I don't want that dog adopted before I get to it. So, because the Humane Society, she asked them, she's like, can you, like, promise me the dog? And they're like, no. So she raced to the Humane Society after she got off work and got Wilson. We had Sydney and Wilson. Sydney was a purebred, and her parents had pedigrees, and we just chose to not show her, basically. And she was very pretty beagle, though. And then we got Wilson, who was kind of this, like, he's 15 now, so he's very old. So he's, like, very, you know, arthritic and kind of lost sometimes. But when he was a younger beagle, he was, they took care of each other. So my mother broke the two dog rule. Now she has a Snorky. So with Wilson, that she inherited from a family member, and that dog is lovable, but he just barks so much because it's just so schnauzery. But we never really had, well, funny enough, though, we never had big dogs. We always begged my mom, I always wanted a golden retriever. And I was like, could we get a golden? And she's like, absolutely not. And I was, we can get another beagle, though. So, I think you kind of sort, like, I don't know, this is kind of the same question. It's what brought you to your occupation or role with this breed? We kind of answered that, I feel like, in the first question. So I'm going to go right to this next one, which is really for all the listeners out here. And it's, who should have a Labrador Retriever?
You can go. Well, it's a breed that you have to be willing to have your life be messy. They shed terribly. And they, as we talked about before, if there's water anywhere, they're in the water. If they can't find a lake, they do a puddle. If they can't find a puddle, they do a hose. You know, they're water dogs. They have webbed feet. They have waterproof coat. They carry things around constantly. They're retrievers. I mean, there's a lot about them that would irritate a lot of people, unless you're like us. We think it's really cute.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
And we think it's highly, highly attractive. But you have to be that kind of person. And, you know, we like when somebody's been around a Labrador or had one, but if they haven't, we really suggest, you know, spend some time with, not your friend's trained dog, like, spend some time with, like, a teenage Labrador outside in the mud.
Also, they're really good family dogs. They can be very obnoxious if they're not well trained, but if you get them trained right from the beginning, which is what we highly encourage it, more than just suggest it. They're just very friendly with the family. Children lay on them. My grandchildren lay all over.
My grandson was brushing their Labrador's teeth with an electric toothbrush. I was letting him, and it wasn't his toothbrush, I know that.
And so they become, you know, one of the kids, and it's perfectly normal, you know, to get pictures. We get pictures from people all the time of their kids laying on the floor, you know, two or three kids laying with the dog in the pack of kids.
Or the dog is laying under the swings in the right. swing set, you know, or they're going down the slide and landing on top of the dog and the dog is enjoying it.
And like my granddaughter was standing on top of their dog to see over the back of the couch and the dog's just laying there like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Yeah. Or she would put hats on the dog while she was playing because the dog just wanted to be near her while she was playing with her toys. And if they are trained, they are excellent family dogs.
I'm so sorry. That's Amazon at my door. Give me one second.
That's important.
We're good. I just had to let him in.
I just thought of something else. Yeah. It should be somebody that's physical, you know, like they yeah. need to be able to take the dog for a walk, take the dog for a run. We never ask people about their yard because we don't care if their yard is fenced because that won't do it. You have to take the dog out, take it for a walk. You know, people that, you know, just have an active lifestyle or are willing to commit taking the dog out.
They have to accept the fact that, especially at the beginning, the first couple of months, they're probably going to be getting up in the night. So you have to be physically fit.
Or just willing.
Yeah, like, willing to.
Yeah.
We've had people buy puppies who live in the city and they're wonderful dog owners because they have to, they have to take the dog out. There's no opening the door and putting it out in the fenced yard.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that Dylan and I talk about because we both had the benefit of letting the dog out into the fenced yard and they could just play out there with us. And then we could just go right back in and their exercise was kind of out of the way. And I'm like, well, we live in a 2-bedroom apartment in the middle of Chicago. So it's like, that's not really, we have a little yard, but it's great for like a poodle or a shih tzu.
Right.
So it's not good for like a beagle even. So
dogs that would love that. But if you let the Labrador out in the yard and you don't go out with them, they just, a young one will chew up your hose,
they're
chew up your
bored.
Picnic table.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I remember with my aunt and uncle's lab who she's 5 now. Her name's Sunny. She's a bright, like yellow golden colored lab. Yeah. but when she was younger, man, oh man, what a lot of dog to deal with all the time. But she's starting to kind of mellow down now. So she's out of the puppy years, but now it's funny that you say like, they'll just kind of like lay and let people like be with them because I just remember they put like Christmas sweaters on her and I know she probably hates it and they put like little hats on her at Christmas too, but she just puts up with it because it's funny to everyone.
Thing. And you know, that's why they guide the blind. I mean, they're just kind of,
they are extremely amiable. They will allow people to make them look ridiculous and they'll just sit there with a smile on their face. Like,
yeah. Oh man. During like family get togethers, we always go to my aunt and uncle's house. And when the whole family's over for like Christmas, that dog is the happiest it ever is because there's so many people to play with and it's festive and
little bits of food
yes.
throughout the day. They are also feeding machines, that's for sure.
Right. So going on to the next question is, so if someone is coming up to you and asking, you know, we're thinking about getting a Labrador Retriever, but we're sort of a blank slate. We don't really know much beyond the obvious, so to speak. What advice would you have to them just about considering the breed? I know you mentioned like you would want to, you know, kind of be like, are you physically active? Are you able to get them out and exercise and things like that? Are there other things that you talk about when you have a prospective buyer?
I mean, we tell them the negatives about the breed because we don't want anybody buying one who doesn't have their eyes wide open because we want
always want them to succeed. Yeah, it's really important to us.
We've seen what happens when people buy a dog and we're related, you know, I've had family members, you know, get a dog somewhere and they just weren't, you know, they didn't know that you have to get up at night with a puppy or they, you know, they kind of thought if I do everything right, nothing will go wrong. It's like,
right.
No, they're going to be up accidents. And, they're, you know, they're living things. So if somebody came to us,
exactly,
late, I think we would say, why, like, what do you think a Labrador is?
And you know, see and if why we agree on that. Yeah. And we always, we do not have people buy dogs from us and never meet us or never meet the dogs. Now, there have been occasions where we have shipped puppies to buyers, but we knew those buyers were experienced dog people and knew what they were getting.
Sure.
With our normal person.
With normal pet families that buy a dog, they come out and meet us and see the dogs.
When they're puppies.
But they also see the adult dogs, you know, so they can, you know, some occasionally, like, they'll have a child that's terrified of a dog.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're getting off subject here.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Yeah, this is,
You didn't know that was going to happen. You know, like, you all thought that this was going to be this rosy moment, but, you know, your child is hiding behind the couch. And, you know, that doesn't mean you can't get a dog, but you might need to do some things here, you know.
And I've had families come to visit where their children have never been around a puppy because they were born after the people already had a dog. And the children want to be with my big dogs and they do not want to hold the puppy because the puppy is squirming and biting.
I think that's really common because the big dog is all calm and not threatening and the puppy is kind of like, you know.
Yeah, that's one thing that when we had even beagle puppies, they're little and they're squirmy. And I remember they are, both of them only let my dad pick them up. And so, like, if they're like, Wesley, go take out Sydney, but you have to carry her because it's snowy. Oh my God. I'd have to, like, vice hold her like this. I'd be like, don't move. Otherwise, you're so wriggly and small. Down, like, yeah. And I remember thinking, I saw a little kid once try to pick up a puppy and they got really frustrated and they just went over to the adult dog. And it's so, I didn't even imagine. It's like, oh, I wonder. Because to me, I would think kids would automatically gravitate towards the littler things, I guess. But
I've had them throw their arms around the mother dog.
Yeah.
And just say, can we have her? And it's like, okay. Like, this isn't exactly going how we planned.
Right.
Like, no, that one is staying here.
Right. That's so funny. I guess I'm a little biased, too, because when we got both dogs, well, Sydney was 8 weeks when we got her, and my brother, we had a very sickly beagle before, and my brother didn't really remember her, so I think my brother was excited about a puppy, but I remember my parents were stressed because they were like, oh man, it's like, it's so small, like, it's not a rescue dog that's already like 3-4 years old. And, you know, granted, my parents read so much about, you know, train your beagle not to bark when, like, for no reason. And I'm like, you know, they managed to do it. But that's one thing that I, you know, my parents were very diligent about, luckily, and about training.
Beagle run away. Beagles want to run away.
Oh my God. Well, Sydney tried twice and we got her. Well, she came back because she realized there was nothing else. So she just liked us, I guess. Wilson tried 3 times and we found him every time and he never tried again after that.
Oh, good.
And yeah, he was a rescue, and we wonder if it was a thing. It was just like a test. I mean, we were like, I wonder if he was testing us or something, because he, like, he was not hard to find. He would just be sitting on a sidewalk, be like, really? Like, like a couple blocks away. Yeah.
He had a plan.
He was like, okay, I'm in.
He's never tried since. And he's so old now. If he does wander away, he's only gone a couple feet. So it's like, where's he going to go? He's
like, I'm running.
It's like, no, you're not even halfway down the driveway. Like, okay. So yeah, I really like what you said though about making sure that a prospective buyer isn't like eyes wide open, glamorizing the dog, so to speak. Because I think that's very easy when you have a breed that's very popular in this country, and also just kind of a signature breed in a way of kind of the whole shebang of getting a dog. Like, you know, labs are just ubiquitous.
Right, it's the great dream, right? You know,
exactly.
You have people who they hunt. Someone in the family hunts. But they have jobs and a family and they live, you know, not where you can hunt. but they want to hunt. And so they want a pet that will go hunting. And the reality is they're maybe going to go hunting twice a year. And my friend called that Eddie Bowell. But yeah, I respect the fact that you want this dog, even though you're probably realistically not really going to go out much. But if you wanted to go, you could. And this dog is a hunting dog and it's a nice pet for your kids.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
it's as close as you're going to get right now.
Right. Yeah. And so that, you know, that's another factor about Labradors is that they can do so many different things for people. My, you know, our dogs, Sue and I, our dogs, oh my God, they have so many different jobs. But so more people buy Labradors, no matter how fancy the breeding is, we can breed two champions. We can breed the best pedigree and it still will be most attractive to pet homes. We will have more people that want them just to be a pet with their family that they can go for a walk. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go to a vacation home on a lake and they tell me, we go to the vacation home, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. It's on a lake.
We throw the stick off the dog.
Right. We want the dog to go swimming in the lake with our family. Ride in the boat, you know, be friendly to the kids. And if they like that lifestyle, if the people like it, you better believe a Labrador is going to love it. That's, you know, right up there with their
nirvana.
Normal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Of heaven. But, you know, they can also, you know, be very fun for people like us who like to compete. And
we don't
such
have,
like
we
that.
Don't, we don't. We don't have a house on the lake. Well,
we don't have a house. Well, Sue does. Yeah.
Sure. I can see that, though, where it's one thing where, you know, I pointed out, I remember in the episode, labs are probably best known as a working dog in at least to a city person as a seeing eye dog or a dog for the disabled. And so that's the automatic thought I usually have when I think of a Labrador retriever is, oh, those are like service dogs most of the time.
Right. Yeah.
But I forget it's funny to hear you say that they're mostly, you know, bought up as a pet home or a home pet. And so that's, I don't know, I guess it's sort of for once I'm kind of like, oh, I guess it isn't just the service aspect that really keeps this breed popular. It really is if you have an active family, it's a great option.
Well, people who have one get another one.
You know, very,
you know, I don't mean they have two. I just mean that they don't tend to, in our experience, we have a skewed sample.
Right.
But they, you know,
they come back for more.
Right. This is something that Dylan and I deal with all the time. It's, do we want to keep getting the same kinds of dogs when we finally do get one? We actually don't have a dog. So a lot of listeners don't know we don't have a dog. Like it's just the name of the show because we're forever trying to figure out what one we want. But also our apartment's too small. But one thing I've always said, it's like, it would be interesting if we just kept tons of different dogs in our lives, but something is going to tell me it's like, I'm going to fall in love with some breed and I'm going to want to get that same one over. And well, I already have, it's beagles. But
and you don't know what it is.
Yeah. No. You don't know if you have it. Yeah.
See, and beagles is an interesting thing for us. Cause my family, the Van Hoosen family, they emigrated to America in the late 18th century with beagles. So they've kept them for like hundreds of years. So it's sort of like a weird, like handed down tradition that the men of the.
Well, you can't break that dynasty.
No. So Van Hoosen men always keep beagles. And my dad did it. My grandfather did it. My great grandfather did it. My cousins have done it. And I'm like, okay, I have to have a beagle. So. Plus I love them, but I am always kind of wondering, it's like, what is going to be kind of like my other breed that I'm going to be like, no, we have to keep getting this one too.
And you know, people, like competitive people, like we are, especially in the breed ring, you know, the actual beauty contest, we call it a flash breed where they get a different breed because Labradors are kind of plain and that you don't do a lot of grooming.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So at some point, almost everybody like tries to get some furry thing
or something that
like there's some prancing thing that goes running around the ring like its hair's on fire. Right. And then they come back, you know, but it's like, yeah, I don't blame you.
But Sue had a Tibetan Terrier years ago.
Yeah, and I was like, I want to be one of those people that was combing their dog's hair and everything. And it was a short face.
And I had Dobermans. I've had several Dobermans, but and I love the Dobermans, but now we're just Labradors.
Sure. I love the only interaction I've ever had with a Doberman, I went camping once in Colorado, and the owner of the campground had a Doberman. She was like 13. Her name was Cleopatra. And aww, she was the sweetest dog. She liked us because we were like, you know, we weren't like a family full of kids. We would just kind of sit there around the fire and talk so she could just chill with us. So we kind of fell in love with this Doberman over our like 5-day camping trip. And then, yeah, and she's the sweetest Doberman. And I think they're just stunning looking dogs, Dobermans. Just they're so sleek and yeah.
We have a friend who got a dog from us, and it's just a top obedience Labrador, but she also has Dobermans, and her Dobermans in the obedience ring, they lose points because they go up to the judge. They want to snuggle up with the judge. Like, she'll leave the dog on the recall and turn around, and the judge is like sitting, the dog is sitting over there with the judge, like, hey, how are you doing? Hi.
Exactly. That's so funny. Oh man. Okay. I need to get us back on topic. I could talk about different dog breeds all day, but we have to talk about labs. Okay. Yeah, so the next one, this is one thing I'm always interested, because I can Google this and it's just, it's going to just kind of pop up an answer, but I want kind of an honest take, and it's, what is the average cost of a Labrador Retriever puppy? Because Google tells me it's like this hundreds of dollars to this thousands of dollars. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way to explain this to a listener than just dollar amounts.
Well, you know, lately I've been trying to help some people that were trying to get a puppy and couldn't get one from us because we didn't have one available. So I actually have been looking at websites and talking to these people. And I found out exactly, a lot of good breeders are now charging about $2,500 for the, you know, well-bred Labradors, but I did see some as low as $1,000. So I would say they're running right now between $1,000 and $2,800, depending on the type. Some of the field dogs are $1,500 to $2,500. The show dogs, the confirmation, you know, there, I mean, type.
And like anything else, it just depends on what and the breeder where, is deciding to charge.
And you where
know,
the
it's
breeder
a limited
is.
Resource. There aren't, you know, there are not enough puppies for right. people. So.
It's, you know, we always say we're not a puppy farm. We can't just
we're not making right.
it's not a puppy factory. We can't just make more. So, you know,
I think a person needs to plan on spending at least $1,000.
Definitely at least $1,000. And probably nowadays, if you're in the major metropolitan areas, it's going to be more like $1,500 to $1,800.
Sure. And that's one thing that, you know, that's a thing where we published the Lab Retriever episode. That was, I want to say season 2 or 3. So that was maybe a year and a half ago. And so prices of everything has changed now. Yes. So, and that affects any downline of market of like what, like supplies, even like what you need to raise your puppies. Like,
Carol.
Yeah. Right. So it's one of those things where it's one of those answers where I know it's sometimes like not ideal for people who may be seeking out a dog. Cause I know for me, Dylan and I always talk about wanting to have kind of like a separate savings account basically for our pets, because you just never know. They are a living thing. It's not like, you know, maybe they get sick. Maybe they have to have a surgery. You just don't know. And so to me, getting a dog is a kind of a major financial decision.
Absolutely. And emergency vets are just so expensive. And when you have a puppy, that can happen. They can get diarrhea. Labrador puppies eat stuff and get into trouble. And, you know,
you gotta love the breeds that just eat anything.
Oh, Beagles, yeah.
Pugs, schnauzers, labs.
Oh, yeah.
No, my, f- Yeah.
Barbie shoes. We had one puppy that.
Oh no.
Barbie shoes. Oh, I don't know.
We had my mom's best friend got a pug, and I want to say every 6 weeks there was something it had eaten that had to be like, they had to go to the vet and get it taken out, you know. I'm like, good God, that's so much money. Like, that's the first thing I think about is like, that is like insane. Like, but you know, it happens. And that's one thing that Dylan and I want to be prepared for, which kind of leads me into my next question is, what costs for a dog, or maybe just a any dog in general, have you found that people are kind of commonly unaware of when it comes to owning one? Because I feel like for some people, owning a dog is easy. It's, you have a pet, yeah, you buy it food, you take it to the vet when it's sick.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's, yeah.
I think veterinary costs,
yeah,
you know, the surprise veterinary costs, and I would definitely look into pet insurance for that.
Mm-hmm.
That reason. You know, they need, I just thought of another one, which is boarding or pet sitting. You know, not everybody has that figured out.
That's
very expensive.
And I mean, so you might be able to find somebody to watch your trained Labrador, but good luck finding somebody to watch your 8-month-old Labrador.
Right. And if you live in a city like Chicago, dog boarding is a fortune. And, you know, a lot of people have dog walkers, pet sitters, and it's very expensive. And
yep. Oh yeah. Dylan's a dog walker and a pet sitter. So I mean, he loves it, but he's definitely come home with, you know, bites and bruises. And, you know, the poor guy, I'll be like, what's that? And he'll be like, oh, you know, Luna bit me today. It's fine. And I'm like, good Lord. Like, you know, and it's just this. And Luna is like the little dog, like the little one that just gets very skittish. But no, he does it up in Evanston. Yeah.
I would also submit that people are going to hire a dog sitter or a dog worker because they can't take their dog out.
Right.
You know, like he's going to, because I had a boarding kennel for decades, and I realized, you know, people are boarding their dogs with me that they, like, sometimes they would come up with one and then there would be another dog in the car. And I would be like, what about that dog? And it's like, oh, our friend is watching that dog.
Ice. Yeah,
it's like, this dog can't stay with any friend, you know, and I would, you know, so that might be the case with Dylan.
Yeah, so I would say the veterinary costs they should be aware of that they may not have thought of, and pet sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everybody knows you have to train them, so presumably they would know that you need to pay for dog school and you need to pay for food,
right?
They don't
toys
really
know, and things but, like that. Yeah,
they don't really, you know, in terms of, you know, you can get a cage, you know, relatively cheap.
And those are things that we often talk about with people. We try and get people to come at least once when the puppies are small, long before they go home, so that we can talk about all these things. And
we say, like, make a vet appointment before you come pick up your puppy.
Yeah.
So that you can take it to the vet the first week and make sure we sold you a healthy puppy and get started on the shot schedule. And establish a relationship with the vet so that if you have a problem, you're not looking for the vet in the middle of the night. And, you know, we give them a list of the layette of the what they need for the puppies, which most people end up getting more stuff. So they're not really surprised.
Right. We don't want them to have a lot of surprises. But I do talk about pet insurance, though we don't have pet insurance. I know lots of people that do and have found it to be very helpful. And, you know, one time having an emergency, when you go to an emergency hospital in the night or, you know, on the weekend, whatever, it is always about $900.
To walk in the door.
Just to walk in the door and have any of the basic services. And, you know, that
if your dog is in trouble, you got to pay it.
Right. And if they need some major thing, it's going to be out the door. So, you know,
That's always one thing too that Dylan and I are advocates for is pet insurance. If you have a dog that is, well, I remember my grandmother had a Bouvier and it had hip dysplasia. It had some other kind of joint problem in its back hips besides the dysplasia. And I'm pretty sure it had the disorder where the cartilage doesn't quite meet up to the bone correctly. And right. So she had to get pet insurance just right. to have the dog, you know, yep. and had surgery after surgery. And she's like, thank God for pet insurance. So I'm yeah. like that. I kind of learned a lesson. It's like, well, if we ever get a dog that, you know, could have those kinds of problems, it would be a good idea. It's one of those things that where we think about now, we would probably just get it because we live in a city. And yeah. where you say 900, it could be 1500.
Oh, yeah. Here,
you know, so, yeah, that is something that I'm always kind of it's glad to hear that it I'm glad to hear that it exists. And, you know, a lot of the times my employer gives a discount for it. So it's like you can kind of less than what you might pay retail. But you mentioned training a little bit earlier. And this is something I'm kind of obsessed about is like the best ways to train dogs or like, is there one or does it depend on the dog? So the question is, what wisdom do you have on training a Labrador Retriever puppy?
They have to go to a class. They have to go in a group. I don't really know how people handled it during COVID. It must've been awful, but
A lot of them didn't get very well right. trained.
I mean, there are kind of a generation of dogs that we're seeing that people are saying this was a COVID dog and it wasn't socialized, but
they have to be trained so that they're used to being around other people and dogs because they love people
they're
and
so,
dogs
they're
so much.
Social.
Yes.
I mean, what we say about our puppies is, of course, you have to socialize the puppy, but then you kind of have to unsocialize them.
And teach them to
you
behave.
You have to teach them, like, the world is not your oyster. Everyone is not, and they don't want to meet you. You need to stay here. And the only way to do that is get them in a group with other dogs and people. And a really common thing that people say of all breeds is, he's fine with a cookie or he's fine in the kitchen,
at home, right.
but when I take him for a walk and he sees another dog, he loses his mind. And it's like, well, that's when you have to train him then. And so, you know, you take him to a class full of other dogs, that helps greatly.
And they learn to behave in public. I always tell people they must have a job, and the job could just be as simple as I have to come and I have to sit and then I get a treat. Because if you don't give them a job, they will become...
They will find their own job. You're not going to like it.
They will, be yeah. self, they will become self-employed and you will not like the job they pick. And it's a bad one. So they must go to training class, even if you have another idea of what you're going to do with your dog later on. You know, you want your dog to go dog.
I mean, what we say is like, we're super experienced dog trainers and competitors, and we take our dogs to classes, and we
all the time.
We like to go to the beginner class because the dogs are all crazy and wild, and it's good distractions.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, it's interesting to hear too. I've never really seen a source that specifically states you must go to a training class. It's always like you may need to, or it's kind of like vaguely phrased
with a puppy until you understand. But like, I think we're pretty compelling about it because everybody knows someone with a Labrador that loses its mind either when someone comes over.
Comes to the door.
It sounds like the dog you were referencing was like that. It's just so common.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're awful if they're not. We say they're like drunk people on a cruise ship. Like, they're not friendly, but it's like, get away from me.
They're just obsessive.
Yeah. They relentless.
Right. They're very friendly, and if they're not trained,
they have
wild
no boundaries.
And crazy. Right.
No boundaries.
They're not mean. They rarely are mean.
No, there's no concept of personal
space. Right. But they just will just lose it and be all crazy and excited and jump on people. And I tell people, you know, nobody likes to go to somebody's house and they're all clean and they're coming for an event and a dog jumps all over them, scratches their legs, dirties their clothes.
Christmas aunt and uncle's house.
So they must.
And then let me guess. I bet they say he's just trying to say hi, or he's just being friendly.
He just likes you.
It's just like I don't feel that friendly.
Right? And I was like, well, there are other two dogs. Dylan's home here in the corner.
Finally,
I'm
dog walker.
Yes. He can't hear anything. I'm in the headphones.
Yeah.
but he says hi. The one thing that they did eventually get their dog to training courses and to like really kind of re-socialize. And I was like, that's even harder when they're like 2 years old Because they got the dog and then COVID happened, just like you said. So now in Nebraska, as soon as the rules got lax, they started going to training classes with like their near full grown dog. Yeah, and so it's she's very polite and everything now, and very much she is, though. It's funny because she doesn't know her strength, so she'll just like walk into you. And I'm like, you're too strong for a dog. Like, I can't, you're going to knock me down. But but that's really nice to hear, though. It's like going to a training class is like required. That's something that it's kind of refreshing to hear that.
That everybody knows a Labrador that is obnoxious.
This next question is kind of like I'm interested to hear your opinion because I guess for me, so the question, I should just say the question. What do you think has kept Labrador Retrievers at the number one spot of the AKC's breed registration for almost 30 years? This is something that Dylan and I are kind of fascinated by in a way because there's 204 breeds now. And it's something where this breed has seen tons of trends of dogs, you know, all that. And yet somehow it still manages to just be like the classic number one dog. And do you think it is because of, like you mentioned earlier, it's a great home pet, or, you know, it's all of its other qualifications and training, you like specific job type training you can do? I wonder if that might be it. What's your opinion?
You know, there's no finer dog. There's not even a second place. We might be slightly biased on this, but I don't think so.
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, they're really wonderful dogs in many ways. They have multiple purposes that various different breeders breed specifically for different purposes. We tend to have dogs that are multi-purpose.
They're more moderate, but if people want to hunt, they can do that.
Yeah, there are some breeders only breed field dogs, and they have big litters. They're easy, you know, to breed. They're not
they're not high maintenance dogs.
Right, they're not high maintenance. So
I think a really big reason is you can be a highly imperfect dog owner and the Labrador is still okay. Like, it's just obnoxious, but it's not biting people. It's still happy. I don't think all breeds are like that.
Sure. It'll just think the world is its oyster for its whole life.
And the dog will be happy.
Yeah.
General, they're healthy dogs. You know, there's so many breeds that I do like, but have inherent medical problems. And because it's part of it, especially like the brachiocephalic dogs. I love French bulldogs. I think they're darling, but I can't have a French bulldog. I would be too worried about, you know, the heat and the this and the that. Where Labradors.
And it would not go hunting with your husband.
No, it wouldn't go hunting. but they, you know,
they can't swim.
The Labradors, they don't wear a sweater in the winter. They're not cold. They're out running in the snow and the ice. They'll go out in the rain. They don't need a coat. They don't look out the door and say, oh,
they don't
need
special food.
Right. They eat regular
food. They eat all the food on the table.
They eat everybody's food. Yeah. So we just think that, you know, it's the multiple purposes that people breed them for. They have big litters. And we, of course, think they're the best.
What is their litter size, actually?
I think 9 is average.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I thought.
Average. So you figure we know lots of people who have that are only about 5 or 6, but there's
many. They don't usually need C-sections. You know,
right.
they do things.
Right.
Yeah. And lots of them have 10 or 11. We had one girl for several years, and I think she had 3 litters of 12. Once she even had 13. She was just a really big girl.
That was in between getting her master hunter title.
Oh yeah. She was a great field dog.
Wow.
But the puppies was a wonderful mother.
Yeah.
You know? So
That's crazy. I guess that number is shocking to me because most of the breeds I've researched for this season of the show, the first breed I did was Japanese Chins, and they only have like two to three per litter. Yeah. So nine is like massive to me.
Yeah, and they need a C-section.
Right.
So
do they? Oh, they didn't mention that in the book.
Well, a lot of small
when
dogs
they have the
do.
Shape of their head like that, they don't really come out.
I know Frenchies do. That was one thing that definitely was brought up in their stuff. But you did mention you actually kind of sort of introduced my next question, which was great, is like, are there common health concerns for Labrador retrievers? Because I know that's one thing, like you just mentioned, that it can be a really big like yay or nay to getting a dog is, you know, can it get sick? Can it have all these problems? Because I know Dalmatians, it was like so many things, and I was a little shocked, and I was like that really changes my perspective.
Right. You know, sports injuries tend to be a big problem in all big dogs, even medium dogs.
And Labradors do it because they think first and they jump first and ask questions later. Right. So they tear their ACL getting the Frisbee.
Right.
I mean, 4, 5, 6-year-old dogs, you know, they're weekend warriors.
Right.
Yeah,
sports injuries. And there are plenty of dogs of all breeds that have allergies. And, you know, every now and then somebody's dog will have allergies and we will have known the parents and grandparents and they don't have allergies. So I think allergies in general for
I think
a
they're
lot
increasing
of
in all dogs.
I think so too.
That can be your next podcast.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, we dealt with that with Wilson. Wilson's allergic to gluten. So he's been on special food ever since we got him.
Oh, Wilson, that's sort of hilarious.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he's lived so long, is because he's gotten like really good food his whole life. Like that's like specially
and
made.
Right.
Yeah. Now he's on Benefol, which he lives for it now. It's like he's so old now. But that's interesting, though, to kind of I would have never considered sports injuries just because I guess it is one of those things where it's not something that you can really like see genetically or, you know, root out in breeding or anything like that. It can just happen. And again, one of those things where I wonder if, you know, I would have never thought of that if I owned a big dog, is like it can get actually like it can get injured, because
to me
dogs are always so sturdy and like capable and everything. But I can definitely understand that.
If you throw something for a Labrador, it's going to go get it at full speed regardless.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's I like how you phrase it, where it's like they jump before they think about the consequences.
And really, I should say they jump and they just don't think afterward either.
Yeah. They're like, what?
Yeah.
So one thing, when we interviewed our last person for the guest spot, she was a Basset Hound breeder, and she had mentioned that she and her team were doing a lot of things to sort of make sure that they can prevent as many health concerns as they can before they get the puppy, you know, the puppy's bred, so to like for that. And yeah, so it's like, are there things that you two do to sort of ensure that your puppies are, you know, the best they can be, the healthiest they can be, all that? And I'm sure, you know, like what do you do?
We do a lot of things we screen for clearances using veterinary experts, and you know, it goes into a database. Our dogs and all dogs that have this sort of thing are microchipped, and so nobody's cheating on this, but we check their hips, their elbows, we check their eyes. We do a DNA panel now because technology
and
veterinary medicine has advanced in a wonderful way, so we can check whether dogs, you know, are carrying recessive genes. And we still can't check for a lot of things. We can check
The heart. We have to have a heart clearance for all of our dogs with a cardiologist. But fortunately, that can just be done once when they're over two. Some breeds have to go to the cardiologist multiple times, and it's
expensive. The bottom line is we do everything in our power to ensure that the combination of genetics are healthy. And, you know, that's all we can do. But if there's something available, any good breeder would do it, you know, because nobody wants to be a part of having a puppy come into the world that has a problem.
And we really high
I mean, we've also had dogs that we use the term wash, where, you know, our family ends up with our dog because we thought it was going to be a champion, but it just isn't quite
right.
The few, the proud, the Marines, and somebody gets a really good dog and it doesn't carry on any sort of line. And that's painful, but it's not the end of the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. We really want to breed dogs that we feel have,
best possibility,
you know,
right.
Great temperament. Temperament is number one in Labradors. They have to have a good temperament. And then, you know, we do all the health clearances and
we do everything we can.
Yeah. Everything we possibly can.
You know, I also just wanted to throw this in when we were talking about the price of puppies and how wonderful we are as breeders and all that.
Sure.
also, you know, I'm sure that you talk about this, but I know in the Midwest, there's at least 3 or 4 really good Labrador rescue organizations that we know about. And so, you know, they may not get an 8-week-old puppy that is the color and, you know, sex that they want at the time of year that they want, but we've been involved in rescue helping them. And there are lots of good dogs there if you just, you know, have to be open.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's one thing that Dylan and I always advocate for is to, you know, look for a rescue. And that's one thing I'm really grateful for the national breed clubs in a way. And there are a lot of those websites are just incredible resources for that. And they'll get you linked up with the national rescue for the specific breed. Yeah. It's incredible how much, you know, how interconnected it can all be now just because of technology, and it's just such an ease of use. And like a lot of one of the breed clubs website just had an interactive map and you just clicked on it and it just showed you
awesome
where there was a rescue available in your state. Yeah, it was just
nice.
We always tell people, you know, we always encourage going to a rescue or shelter first, just because it's something that we feel as there's a dog that's already in the world and they need a home. And if it's a match, you never know. It's like, you just never know. Cause we've bought our dogs and we've gotten rescues and we've loved them all. So it's
absolutely,
yeah, it's and that's just from mine and Dylan's growing up. Like they had a rescue poodle when he was really little, and then they have a Pomeranian now. So they have the little dogs. Like
my agility teacher, all of her Labradors are from rescue. She's involved with a rescue.
And we use the term Labrador loosely.
yeah. They might not be 100% Labrador.
They're wonderful. Sure.
But she gets all of her dogs through the rescue and she helps the rescue. And we've helped the rescue and are glad to, because yeah, like you say, the dogs are in the world. There's plenty of people who want to get a puppy, you know, from the word go, and that's fine. But if you don't, you know, and you can go to a rescue and get one of those dogs, it might be the perfect dog for you.
Absolutely. The last question I have for you two is kind of just a follow-up to what you do as a way to ensure the health and longevity of your dogs. What can we as owners, or, you know, just people who take care of the dog in an everyday situation, do to make sure that we're giving them the best kind of like options for their health, for their long life, just in all those kinds of things?
You know, there's so many answers to that, but for Labradors specifically, I'm going to lead with, they are a breed that wants to be overweight. And it's really important that the puppies are not overweight for their orthopedic health. And every veterinarian in the world will agree with me on this. And also, it's not good for an adult Labrador to be overweight, but they really, don't you think they're prone to it? They're just hungry.
They're eating machines.
They're hungry all the time. Like I totally,
so we are Labradors.
I totally identify with the Labrador.
me three.
But I think for the Labrador, that's really important that they, you know, it's not cute. Like a chubby puppy is not cute.
Right.
And, you know, good veterinary support. They need heartworm, all that stuff that they went to college for 12 years to tell you how to take care of your dog.
Right.
But we, you know, we follow all that.
Right.
And I think that it's really important that people find a good breeder. Don't just read a website, think it sounds good, and say, well, you know, everything sounds good. meet the breeder. And if they have puppies,
I mean, there's no excuse not to be able to do research.
Right. Like you can, yeah. All the breeders that I know, they want to meet the buyers. They want the people to meet the dogs.
They don't have secrets. They don't,
right.
They don't have a part of the house where you can't go in. Well, they might, but it's not where the dogs right. are.
So sure.
Go to a good breeder who does the health clearances. They will be very upfront about the health clearances. It's what we do. It's why, you know, we're dog breeders. We're not a puppy farm or a factory. Good nutrition, obviously, but not too much of it.
Right.
And they need to exercise. They must go for a walk. You know, they will follow you from room to room in the house. And sure, they're going to get some steps that way. But they've got to go for real exercise, a brisk walk or running, you know, loose someplace where it's safe and, you know, fun.
Throwing stuff. Something in the water.
Right. Throwing a toy or a, you know, a something. Retrieving bug.
Doesn't matter. They're going to go get it.
Right.
Right.
Or going to agility class. There's puppy agility classes. There's adult agility classes if you really like it. Big fun for the people and the dogs exercise. And it makes them tired and then they take a nap.
You can get your stuff done.
Right. And a sleeping puppy is a good puppy.
Yes, definitely. That's one thing that I'm grateful my parents had kind of active breeds growing up or my family did in general, just because we learned early on. It's like, if you can tire them out, then you'll have time to think they're adorable instead of, you know, being annoyed with them because they're caught wreaking havoc everywhere.
Right. But, yep.
Yeah.
My daughter has two Labradors from us, an old one and a young one. And she has two kids in between ages of the dogs. And every time we go over there, I say, okay, let's get the dogs and go for a walk. And we go for a big walk before we do anything else. And, you know, it's good for the kids. It's good for the dogs.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's one thing too, that's really, I think, a good highlight for them being a family dog, is they're very interactive with kids. And I think a lot of, and there's so much about, you know, parents maybe being afraid of bigger dogs for kids, or kids just being afraid of bigger dogs. And that might actually be a good thing to ask, like, do you have advice for anyone if they are afraid of a larger breed, or if they have a child that's afraid of a larger breed? Like, what may be ways to sort of like introduce a large dog into their life if they want, you know, or maybe like if they're around them on a regular basis, is there a way to sort of just like alleviate that? Or is it really just kind of a getting over thing?
For a child, I would say, don't push it. Like,
sure. You
know,
and also if they grow up with it, they don't know it's a big dog.
A kid, for whatever reason, like,
yeah,
you know,
don't force them.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I've had good luck having the big dog lay down and then like maybe have the kid give the dog, you know, have a the tree. Kid some sort
sure.
of control. But, you know, sometimes they're afraid of the dog for a good reason. They've gotten knocked over or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, I don't blame you. The dog is, you know, twice your size and not well controlled.
Yeah. And it's like four times the strength of the child, even more, you know.
Yes.
Sure. And I suppose like it is a thing too of I was afraid of larger dogs when I was a kid, but I've had those experience where they're very like gentle in the moment and kind of, I know I always thought of it, maybe they can sense I'm uncomfortable and they're kind of like, I don't want to make it weirder. Or like, you know, the dog's just kind of perceptive of like, maybe I need to turn it down for a second for this person, but I don't know. That's one thing though, that I always help people can find a way to alleviate that fear if they do have it. But those are all of my questions that I've prepared for you. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about? I mean, I'm going to just kind of give the floor to you if you have anything else you want to say.
Doing this, I think it's really important that you're doing this because it's a really important decision. And I don't think anybody should make the decision of what kind of dog to get when they see a puppy, because everybody's going to want any puppy. I want all any puppies. Puppy.
All puppies are cute.
Oh my God. Whenever I'm doing the promotional stuff and I have like just puppies up on the desktop, like Dylan's like, oh my God, they're so cute. It's like every single breed. We're like, oh, the puppies are adorable.
I mean, they're made to like make us do that, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. You have to do it, you know, before you get to that point.
Sure.
Do you have anything else? I think we covered it.
When you are going to put this together, I would say we would really like to see the pictures that you're going to use before you do it, because there's Labradors only come in three colors, black, yellow, and chocolate. And the yellows can be anything from almost white to fox red. But you know, there's some other colors that are
sure that are not.
Yeah. They're not approved. They're not.
Well, actually, I was going to ask if you had photos.
Oh, yeah. So,
we'll just use your photos, honestly.
Like, thousands of photos would you like?
We do have a photo that is really a special one. It was a professional photo by some very well-known photographers in Chicago. And it is a lineup of puppies, and we'll get that to you. And it's all three colors, and they're cool. Sitting there. And AKC has used the picture. I've seen it on.
She's made so much money on it. The thing about it is, it's a three color litter, which is why it's. But now you could do that digitally. But this wasn't digital. These are nine puppies sitting in a row. You know, so at the time,
wow.
God, and now I feel like
yeah.
You might look at it and just think I could do that.
Right.
But anyway.
Yeah. So when yeah, you're we'll ready you for pictures, just
yeah,
ask.
No, any, yeah, honestly, what else was I going to say? Before I forget. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I said, we'll just email you some.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to say the last thing that I want to make sure I give you time to do is to talk about, Summit Labrador Retrievers and just about your business and like how people can find you.
You know, really know that we want to do that
no
too much, because we already have way too many people wanting puppies.
Sure.
Say that our website
We can just say
we've been breeding dogs, yeah, but I mean we're not trying to get
people
like we have a litter we don't even tell.
Well, in that case then I can just link your website down into the description.
Right. We always have.
I don't want to sound arrogant, but we're not trying to sell puppies here. Yeah.
No, yeah. I understand. It's something that like it's totally up to you if you want to do it. And sometimes I've had other people interview for other shows. They're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Let's say something. Let's say blurb.
All right.
You know, but our website says it best.
I'm gonna say the blurb, but then I want you to stop the podcast and I want to talk about beagles too.
Okay.
We've been breeding Labradors under the prefix of Summit, S-O-M-M-I-T, since 1983. And we have bred and owned show champions, field trial champions, master hunters, obedience champion,
lots of agility
and UDXs, agility dogs. And we have a lot of service dogs out there. In the beginning, before service dogs were a thing, because we've been doing this a long time, we had a good relationship with a lot of guide dogs. We're really most proud of those dogs.
Yeah, yeah. And when people tell us that their dog is part of their family and they send us pictures of their dog with their kids at Christmas, that makes us really happy.
Yeah, that's our blurb.
That's our, yeah.
Cool. I'll stop down the recording then.
All right, I know I'm talking about beagles.
All right.
Wasn't that awesome? Ugh, such a great interview. So we'll be back next week with a regular breed episode that I will be hosting. And hope to see y'all back. Hope you hear us back then next week. And remember to help take care of the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered. And help out the local shelters any way you can, whether that's volunteering, donating, fostering, or adopting. Thank you.
Wesley Van Hoosen and Dylan Naylor are not pet professionals. Any advice regarding pet ownership and the responsibilities thereof taken from this program should be checked with your veterinarian. All episodes are researched thoroughly, fact-checked, and additionally researched during post-production. Annotated bibliographies of every episode can be found at weregettingadog.com/bibliographies.
This podcast is hosted by Dylan Naylor and Wesley Van Hoosen. If you'd like to reach out or submit a photo of your dog to be featured on our social media, please contact us at WGAD@ArcadiaPodcastNetwork.com or on our Instagram at We're Getting a Dog. Thank you for listening to We're Getting a Dog from the Arcadia Podcast Network.